I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and I am very excited once again to bring you a show that is hot off the press in terms of the latest topics, hot literally and figuratively as well. We're going to begin with a new campaign announced from the folks at Code Red. That's R-E-D-D. You've probably heard of them. Mike Korchinski is the founder of the Code Red campaign. He's going to tell us what they are doing to try to save the world's threatened forests, and just ahead of the Rio Plus 20 conference coming up, just in time for that. Also, in our second half, we're going to be speaking with a young activist. You might have caught her if you listened to the show live. Geneva Boyer was on last week. Unfortunately, because of a technical glitch in the New York studio, she was not recorded, and so she was so amazing we wanted to get her on. So if you missed it last week, you're in luck. Going to hear it. She is a poet, and if she doesn't know what we do, because she is so eloquent and so appropriately angry in her poem. She's written one just recently to President Obama regarding the 2012 election and what she and her generation are asking him to not forget. And she also, a year and a half ago, wrote one and delivered one on climate change to the youth gathered at the Energy Action Summit in D.C., and she delivered that live to Al Gore as well. We're going to talk to Geneva. You will be inspired and impressed with what she is doing as only a junior in college so far. That is a rundown of today's show. We're also going to be talking about some research that just came out of the Brookings Institution, trying to get someone on that, showing a continued rebound in American belief in climate change, no doubt because of the extreme weather that you just heard about at the top of the Green News Report. And, of course, if you are tuned into what's happening with our environment and our climate, you're well aware. We have these wildfires raging already. It's not even technically summer. That's at least a week or so away, and yet they're saying these fires could be burning through the fall. If that doesn't chill your bones, I don't know what will. Climate change, you know, getting more and more serious by the day. I'm very pleased to welcome to the Green Front my first guest, Mike Korchinski. Welcome back. I don't think I've talked to you about Mike. You're always up to great green things, and this one sounds especially interesting and timely.
Hi, Betsy. Thanks very much for having me on. Yes,
tell
it has
about...
been a while.
I'm sorry?
It's been a while, but we've been plugging away here to find innovative solutions to conservation challenges all the time.
It has. And when we last spoke, you were working on something related to this. It was, I believe, with WildWorks?
Yeah, WildlifeWorks. So WildlifeWorks is one of the is the founding company behind the Code Red campaign. And it was the campaign was founded as a result of WildlifeWorks' success in matching forest protection programs with sustainable development programs in the tropics.
And this is what you call a radical market-driven campaign. I think we need a radical market-driven campaign. Tell us what the thinking was behind this, what drove you at Code Red to say, a great name, by the way, you know, we need this kind of approach. What's been missing?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I think, you know, our approach for many years at WildlifeWorks has been that as long as the massive marketplace is somewhat either intentionally or unintentionally destroying the planet, then the relatively meager resources available to NGOs and charities is not going to be able to fix it. So the solutions we've always sought are ones which point the marketplace at the solution rather than and Code Red is the latest in a long line of those innovations from us that essentially says, you know, there's a very fairly simple way in which corporations can be engaged. It doesn't require everybody on the planet to remember to turn their light bulbs off every night. And it can happen.
Because we're not.
Because they're not, exactly. One would have to assume that that has been tried a number of times in the last 30 years. So this is a campaign really that says, you know, the major emitters are corporations, no question, but those corporations are emitting greenhouse gases to make things for us. And as long as our behavior isn't changing fast enough to stem the problem, then maybe we can at least have those corporations play a responsible role in mitigating climate change by reducing emissions in protecting threatened forests of the world and solve one of the most pressing issues of our time. We believe that deforestation really is one of the most pressing issues of our time, and that this Code Red campaign aims to point the massive corporate marketplace at solving that problem.
Has there been any slowdown at all in the pace of rainforest destruction in the last few years as more attention has been brought to it? I would just like to get a sense of where things are at in terms of, you know, the rate at which they've been destroyed.
Sadly, no. Locally, yes. In certain parts of the world, local efforts have made a significant difference to current deforestation rates. So there's a little lumpiness in the data in that some places get better and some places get worse. But on average, still, we're losing 13 million hectares or around 35 million acres of natural forest a year.
Wow. And what is that? Why should anyone listening who may not connect the dots be concerned about that?
The idea behind RED, which is a United Nations program that was originally developed in a relatively lengthy process post Kyoto in 1998, when some scientists realized that that forests not only provide ongoing climate protection through sequestering carbon dioxide and taking gases out of the atmosphere, but they're actually massive stores of carbon. The trees have been storing carbon for centuries, and when a forest is cut down and burned for agriculture or development or to fuel aluminum smelters or cattle pasture for hamburgers or for whatever reason, that carbon that's stored in the trees is released into the atmosphere and adds 7 billion tons of emissions into the atmosphere every year. So all of the conversations that I was hearing on your radio station prior to me coming on about climate impacts and getting warmer, the most significant factor after energy, after us all turning our light switches off, in emissions is deforestation. Deforestation contributes nearly 20% of the annual emissions that are causing the warming effect in the atmosphere.
And, of course, if those trees aren't there, they can't absorb CO2.
Exactly. So you get a double whammy because you immediately release the CO2 that was stored in the trees, the carbon that was stored in the trees, and you've lost that ability to absorb future emissions. So, yes, it's a frightening thought that as bad as things are now with climate impact, they're going to get a lot worse if we continue to destroy forests the way we are.
Are you surprised it's taken this much time and we're not there yet to really awaken the worldwide community to the planetary crisis we're facing? I know you've been working in this space for a long time, longer than I have even, and how do you not get discouraged? And then we'll get to the good news. Well, we'll get more details about which corporations have signed on to this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely surprised. I mean, I think the challenge has always been to provide solutions. I mean, the problem has been obvious, and I think people probably have problem fatigue, you know, because they've been hearing about the problem for so long, and it hasn't been solved. And most people just, it's beyond the you know, again, short of turning light switches off and changing their behavior completely, it's beyond the imagination of most people to, or the responsibility of most individuals to solve this problem. So I think there's been sort of a fatigue about hearing about the problem because I don't think it has any bearing on whether people believe it or not. I just think that they're tired of hearing about the problem with no solutions. And I think really that's what we focus on with this Code Red campaign is there actually is a solution that works beautifully now to protect forest and solves many other problems, climate and sustainable development in rural communities. And it's called RED and it exists and it's being tested and it's working and it just needs to get a lot bigger now. And so we think that the general public is still very supportive of protecting the environment in which they live. Why wouldn't they be? But we just sort of feel that they've gotten a bit of, you know, problem fatigue hearing about the problem without knowing solutions.
Okay, so which are the five major corporations who are taking the lead on this, and what are they pledging to do and to spend?
Yeah, so the way that a company can join the campaign, and this is why we call it an action campaign, you can't just say, gee, we're right behind you, go get those forests. You actually have to pledge a financial pledge to buy emission reductions. So another the way the RED program works is that if a forest is going to be destroyed and release its emissions into the atmosphere and an organization like Wildlife Works or others that are involved in the campaign, including, you know, indigenous groups in Brazil and NGOs in Madagascar, and so there's a wide group of people who are creating these RED projects, and the RED project has to demonstrate that it's prevented the deforestation that would otherwise have happened in a particular forest. And if it can do that, then it gets awarded the emissions that would have been released that it can then sell to these corporates who make pledges to finance the project activities that have protected the forest. So forests are being destroyed for economic reasons. If you get a corporate to to subscribe to financing the alternative of protecting the forest, then you can provide the community with an alternative to destroying it. So the companies that have signed up made those pledges. They've had to make a 3-year pledge. That's the minimum. So we were trying to create forward visibility to the demand from corporates to reduce their footprints. And the corporates are Allianz is the largest. It's the multinational insurance giant from Germany that has operations all over the world, and they, of course, are an insurer, and they see the future impact of climate change on their customers, and so they want to do what they can to help mitigate climate change through forest protection. So we have Allianz is the largest. We have an energy company from Holland called Eneco, which is a Dutch energy company that's focused on trying to bring alternative energy solutions to the European market. We have a German gas provider called Entega that offered their customers a carbon neutral gas option, and they had an overwhelming demand from their customers to provide them with a carbon neutral gas that was based on forest emission reductions. And we have the leading South African bank, Nedbank, which made a pledge to go carbon neutral, which they were the first bank in Africa to go carbon neutral, and they did it with these red emission reductions from a forest project in Kenya.
Is there any significance to the fact that there's no U.S.-based corporations so far signed on?
Well, certainly the U.S. is probably no great surprise to anybody that the U.S. is lagging behind in the climate conversation. There was a moment several years ago when the U.S. was threatening to join the rest of the world in the fight against climate change, but that became politically impossible. So the U.S., the political climate in the U.S. has definitely been less supportive, shall we say, but we believe that the corporate market is equally aware of the impact of climate change and just haven't been provided with a way to participate, you know, other than at the political level, which has not worked. So I think we see that there is interest, very much so, in large U.S. corporates behind the campaign, but they are lagging a little bit behind their European counterparts who've had a climate marketplace for a decade now.
Well, given our heavy footprint in terms of our emissions from this country alone, are you disappointed, frustrated that the United States of America has not only shown leadership here, but is really lagging, especially as the climate crisis is you know, becoming more evident that it's getting worse? Even the latest survey shows that Americans really are starting to connect the dots in greater numbers because of the extreme weather events we're seeing. We're still not seeing policy change, and in fact, we're seeing a lot of money being spent to make sure that we don't wake up and smell the carbon and act accordingly.
Yeah, well, that's your answer there. There is a lot of money being spent to make sure we don't wake up, and we're going to attempt to point a lot of money at waking everybody up. So, because I think that some of the nonsense that your previous story reported on, like people taking words out of legislation to prevent people talking about the very obvious impacts of climate change. I mean, you'd imagine that their population wouldn't stand for that for very long. But
you would think.
You would think that the person whose house just got washed away might think that this wasn't a reoccurring seasonal flood.
Or the fires that just took one life already, and they're now saying, you know, the ones burning in New Mexico and Colorado may not be contained until fall. That just, you know, my jaw fell when I heard that. It's not even officially summer yet, and they're saying these fires may go till fall, and we don't even know. This is just the beginning. This is the preseason.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, people are very busy. I mean, that's a truism, and people's lives are complicated these days, especially in the U.S. And I think that it will take these kinds of issues that impact people directly before there's a groundswell of political change within the United States, I think. And so we're not waiting. I mean, I think that's the message of the Code Red campaign, is we can't afford to wait for political action. Mm-hmm. We have to take back control of this issue from the political realm and get on with it, because we can't afford to watch 35 million acres disappear every year and have our climate get warmer and warmer and the negative impacts get harsher and harsher, while people make decisions which they intellectually know are ridiculous, but do completely for political reasons. And so the campaign will eventually get around to political issues, and once we've developed a groundswell of support, we'll certainly point out how the political arena could help But the message of the campaign is that it's a market-driven campaign. The United States moves as the market moves generally, more so than as regulation dictates. And so we believe that if we can get a massive groundswell of corporate America to support a very simple and effective mechanism for forest protection, that eventually that will translate into political pressure from them on the powers that be to make the appropriate legislative changes to support forest protection and climate reduction.
There's this gathering coming up in June 22nd, I believe, goes through June 24th, and that is a gathering of world leaders, most of them anyway. Our president will not be there, talking about the Rio Plus 20 Earth Summit, and 20 years ago, there was a lot of hope, and who would have thunk that, you know, this many years later, we're not really making the progress we need with the problems, you know, ever more evident. Are you disappointed that President Obama just announced he will not be going, although he is sending Senator Hillary, Secretary, yeah. Yes,
Secretary
Hillary
State,
Clinton
yeah.
is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah, of course. You know,
Secretary
I mean,
State,
on one level, just living in the United States, it's disappointing that this issue isn't deemed to be important enough for the president to attend. You know, as somebody who's actually going to be there, I'm actually relieved because when the president comes to one of these events, the already chaotic environment gets 10 times more chaotic with all the Secret Service and road closures and airport closures and everything. So on a personal level, it's not terrible. But yes, it is. I mean, it's not a surprise at all to us. I think the president has not participated in climate activity really since Copenhagen, and Copenhagen was such a disappointment all around. I think that it's not a surprise that the president hasn't been involved subsequently. Although I'm sure in a private moment he would be very supportive of efforts to mitigate climate change.
And in fact, in a very public interview and with Rolling Stone, I'm sure you saw that he said that this is an important issue to him, climate change. And yet, a few days later, when he appeared at a wind factory, big publicity opportunity, he neglected to even mention climate or carbon, I believe, at all. And he's not going to Rio. There's a movement trying to get him to do a state of the climate speech, and that would really get people to understand why he is concerned, and we should all be concerned. Are you one of those who hold out hope that if reelected, President Obama will show more courage on the climate front than he has been able to or chose to, given what he's up against, for sure, in this first administration?
I mean, I think there's a fair chance of that, I'd say. I mean, I think just as any second-term president, they tend to be able to be more candid about their own beliefs. So we certainly believe he's a smart guy, and he cares about issues personally, I think. That so we would certainly anticipate that his support for these issues would increase in a second term. And again, I think the point for our campaign is we're not waiting. We're not reliant on the political arena. We would love the political arena to line up and support these activities to protect forests around the world, but the forest can't wait. And the political arena, as we all know, even with a president like Obama that came in on such a wave of change, it's a very difficult environment in which to implement change. And so the corporate environment on the other hand is quite accustomed to rapid change, and the corporate environment can move quickly if the market dictates. And so the purpose of the campaign is to try and make the market dictate that corporates line up behind these initiatives for positive reasons, that they there's many benefits they can get from joining into a campaign like this that will, and if they do, then change can be affected quickly and consistently and not be at the whim of political favor.
Well said. And we have just a couple minutes if you can hang on with us and tell us a little bit about Wildlife Works. I know you've been doing all kinds of interesting things before you were even heading up Code Red. So a chance to share that work with our listeners.
Right. So Wildlife Works was founded in 1997. So we've had a good run at trying to implement, and the idea from the beginning was to try and implement solutions really to these difficult problems, and wildlife conservation being the first problem we tackled. And how do you make wildlife work, hence the name, for local people that have to live with wildlife? It's one thing for us to go and look at an elephant in a zoo and visit Kenya for 2 weeks and on a safari, but the Kenyans have to live with elephants day in, day out, and elephants are tough neighbors. So we spent 14 years coming up with economic solutions to to make the to try and align the community's interests with the interest of protecting wildlife and habitat. And so we have a very large project now in Kenya. It's about 400 employees, Kenyan employees, protecting 500,000 acres, so 500,000 acres between two national parks in Kenya. And that was our first project, and that model has become sort of the model for how you do these projects now, these projects that are that have an economic development basis behind conservation. And so we now have a project that we are working with a Canadian partner called ERA in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We decided Kenya wasn't quite difficult enough. We would try it in the DRC. So we have a 750,000 acre project to protect forest in the DRC, working with local groups, local villages in a very remote area of the DRC to protect their forest against commercial loggers. And so things are going well for Wildlife Works. We have about 30 other projects in our pipeline, and we finance our activities by selling these carbon emission reductions to corporates, and also we do still sell fashion produced in our first Kenyan project by the local women there. And we will continue to do that and sell other products that we produce in rural communities around the world.
Mike, are you still making those cool T-shirts?
We are, exactly, yes. And so the Code Red campaign, you can find out all about that on codered.com. And right now you're going to see the announcement for our global launch, which is happening on Tuesday the 19th in Rio at the Rio Plus 20 conference. And for any of your listeners that might be heading down to Rio, you are more than welcome to come. You can RSVP through our website now, and then stay tuned for on the 20th. We'll be updating our website with the global premiere of our film, our Code Red film, and other things. And then if you happen to want to buy a T-shirt, you can do that still at wildlifeworks.com.
Okay, I have to remind you, you still owe me a T-shirt for Al Gore. When he saw me with at the screening of Inconvenient Truth back in 2006, I was wearing your Extinction Sucks black T-shirt with white writing, a little rhinestone over the eye. I love that T-shirt. I still have it somewhere, although it's probably gotten a little small on me after all the wearing and washing and growing. He said he loved it, and we were trying to get one made for him when he was a larger size. He's getting down there, so maybe you can get me one to get to him, because I'm trying to get to him to convince him to have a climate show on his current TV network, because we figure if not there, where? If not now, when? If not who? If not Al Gore, then who?
Exactly, exactly.
Should be the need.
I'll certainly get that done, Betsy. So
do that. Any chance I can to get his attention. So, not kidding. This is really a serious effort. We're trying to get him to practice what he preaches, which is help us get word out about this climate emergency. And I want to thank you, Mike Korchinski, for all the work you're doing, have been doing for all these years. And you sound still resolute and unwavering in your conviction, and you sound quite calm, which is always reassuring, because sometimes I want to scream. I'm sure you have those moments too, given what's going on politically and what's not happening, and given the state of our poor planet. And there's so many signs. Mother Nature is screaming out to us. So thank you for heeding the call and making a difference. Really appreciate your being available on the show today.
My pleasure. And there, for those people who do have a screaming moment, please visit codered.com. There is a very easy way that you can engage in the campaign and relieve that frustration.
And you're right. Next door, I think, in Sausalito. I'm the next town over, Mill Valley. So maybe if you listen carefully, you can hear my primal scream. I do it about once a week.
We've moved, so I'm actually in Mill Valley. I'm probably less than a mile from where you're talking.
We could be on the same street, and here we are on the World Wide Web. I love that. Well, I'm just past town up in the hills here, where the news crews, by the way, were up here yesterday, the television crews, doing a story on the high fire danger because of this unseasonably hot and windy weather. They're concerned with all this brush around here that there could be something like what we saw in the Oakland Hills fire years ago, except things are that much drier now, with perhaps climate change, contributing to that. So it hits close to home if we pay attention, if we're connecting
Absolutely.
The dots.
Absolutely.
I don't know about you, but I grew up here. From your accent, I guess you didn't, but I don't remember the wind being as gusty as it is when it does, build up. It really kind of scares me because it's the winds of climate change, some of us are thinking. But that's another wake-up call. So appreciate, again, your being with us. Maybe we can follow up with you a couple weeks after the summit and see what you're able to accomplish there and get your download on just what it was like to be part of that.
Yeah, I'd love to.
hopefully it will be a productive gathering, and more so than even 20 years ago, Lord knows, you know, more evidence to motivate the leaders who are coming together. And hopefully, if you see Hillary Clinton, tell her, ask her if she thinks we need one green talk show in America to connect the dots for Americans on mainstream radio or television.
Will do.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
All
that does
right,
it for this first half of the show. When we come back right after these messages, we're going to be speaking with Geneva Boyer. She is someone you won't want to miss. She's a member of the Next Generation, speaking out loudly and beautifully about the need to get our leaders to tune into their environment, especially when it comes to climate change. We'll be right back.